Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Tuesday, March 3rd, 2020. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing, Addy Oye Jr., and joining me is Imran, the Don Khan. Imran, how you doing?
I'm doing good. You know what's hard for me to do these days?
What's that?
Not touch my face.
Dude, right? Like, I had to learn that the hard way when I was a teenager, getting pimples every single day. New pimple would arise every single day as I woke up from slumber. And it took me a while to figure out how to not touch my face. Turns out, just gotta just not touch my face.
Yeah, I know.
You just really gotta not do it.
Like, even when talking about it, it's like, I was telling someone about it and I actually like stroked my beard. I was like, oh no, this is a bad idea. Yeah. I should not be doing things that are going to directly put like germs in my body.
And I do the thing where I like to rub the bottom of my chin with the back of my fingers after I shave because there's like a smoothness there and you can like feel like the hair is growing back. And it feels nice to do, but it's a thing where I find myself wanting to do that in the middle of the day, and I'm just like, no, I can't, because I'm gonna look bad if I do that.
Yeah.
Now, is this like a coronavirus thing?
This is a coronavirus thing.
Okay.
I would normally not care, but like, if I get sick, then whatever. But I'm just trying to like best practices, you know.
You gotta shave the beard then. That's what Gary Wood was telling everybody.
Absolutely, I would rather die.
You don't want to shave the beard?
I look like a 10-year-old when I don't have the beard. Honestly, like it's. Honestly, the thing I think that's why most game journalists have beards is because we look really young if we don't have them.
That makes sense.
When are you going to grow the beard is the question.
I'm afraid to. Because it's not that I can't grow a beard. It's that I've never really tried it. And now that I've said that, everybody's going to be like, Blessing, try it. Grow the beard. But it's the process. I don't like the itchiness. And then also, I just don't know how raggedy I'm going to look.
I mean, you did just describe how much you like the smoothness of the...
Yeah, skin, and I do like the smoothness of the skin, and so it's something that I kind of want to hold on to.
Don't feel pressure because everybody else here has like grows out a beard.
Thank you, Bears. You know?
The only reason I have my beard is because I'm fucking lazy. So like I want to shave because I like my more like clean shaven look, but I just get lazy and then I don't shave for like a month.
The thing is, I think like the beard is more work.
Yeah,
honestly, like to like wash it and condition it and all that stuff. If you want to have a nice looking beard, if you want to just grow out whatever.
I mean, that's like, my thing, too. That's why I also, like, don't grow out my hair too long is because I don't like the waiting for it to dry after taking a shower is too much for me. Right. I like the idea of getting out of the shower and not having to, like, worry about my hair and having that be one less thing to worry about.
Yeah. No. When I cut my hair short, I'm like, fuck yeah. I don't have to, like, sit there with a towel and actually like, try to dry it forever.
Imran, I have a question for you. Top three club bangers.
So I saw you and Cool Greg talking about this last night. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't have anything. Like,
really? You don't go to the club?
I'm not a club kid, really, no.
You don't even like club music, though?
I like club music fine. I couldn't identify any. It's like fonts. Like, if you told me a font, I'd be like, yeah, that font's kind of cool. I have no idea what it's called.
I've never heard club bangers bangers compared to fonts before, but yeah. I can see it. I'm gonna read some off, and I'm going to have you tell me yes or no.
Just based on the name?
Just based on the name or the song. Okay, just tell me yes or no.
Okay.
Lose Control by Missy Elliott.
Yes.
Okay, and you're aware of what that song is?
No, but really? I know who Missy Elliott is.
Oh, that's... Dude, that's a banger.
If you made me listen to it, I'd be like, yeah, no, I've heard that before.
Okay, you probably... All of these, most of these, you'll probably have heard before in some capacity. I Don't Fuck With You by Big Sean.
Yes.
I don't fuck with you.
Yeah.
Barrett likes it, so yeah.
Low by
Alyssa,
Flo Rida.
Alyssa loves I Don't Fuck With You.
Dude, that's such a good song.
She loves that.
Dude,
that,
DJ,
like,
DJ
that
Mustard
might be,
and Kanye, man.
That might be her anthem, you know? I'm just saying.
No, I dig it. Low by Flo Rida.
Yes.
Cyclone by Baby Bash.
No.
1-2-Step by Ciara. Yeah.
Yes.
Are you aware of 1-2-Step by Ciara?
No, it reminded me of 1-2-Switch, so I was going to say no, but then Barrett was excited, so like, yeah.
Nice For What by Drake.
No.
Yeah by Usher.
Yeah.
Love In This Club by Usher.
No. I'm going to split the Usher vote down the middle.
That's fair. I'm Different by 2 Chainz.
Yes.
Back That Ass Up by Juvenile.
Yes. That one I've actually heard.
Okay. Left Right by YG.
No.
Work It by Missy Elliott.
Yes.
Blow the Whistle by Too Short.
Yes.
Get Low by Lil Jon.
Sure.
Also, we're in the Bay. You should know what Blow the Whistle by Too Short is.
Again, it's probably a thing I'm sure I have heard.
All right. A few more left. Swag Surfing by FLY.
No.
Temperature by Sean Paul.
No.
Oh my god.
At this point, I'm just being contrarian for the hell of it.
Gasolina by Daddy Yankee.
I like the name, so yes.
Okay. Feeling Myself by Mac Dre.
Oh, I also like the name on that one.
That's so, also yes. a Bay Area artist. And then My Neck, My Back from Kia. Oh, yeah.
The anthem of being 30 years old.
Sure. No?
Yeah, that joke did not play at all. Okay. Yeah, sure.
Perfect. This is the type of news day it is, guys. I'm trying to prolong this thing before we get into it, because we don't have that much news, because today's stories include BAFTA nominees, Half-Life Alyx gameplay, and more, because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames or listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kind of Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, or bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad free. Now it's time for some housekeeping.
Listen.
Today is the big day. Boss Baby Barrett spent most of the past year playing every major Zelda game, and because of your support on Patreon back in January, has been working on Zelda In Review, an in-review special where Barrett reviews every Zelda game he played, ranks each game, and rediscovers what makes The Legend of Zelda special. Zelda In Review comes out on the third anniversary of Breath of the Wild, that's today, as a YouTube premiere at 2 p.m. Pacific time on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Make sure to come watch as we premiere Zelda In Review and hang out in chat as Barrett answers questions and talks to you even more about The Legend of Zelda. Barrett, it's finally out today.
I know.
Are you excited?
I'm nervous.
You're nervous? Yeah. Why are you nervous?
Because I've been working on this for like 8 months. It's fucking nerve-wracking.
People are going to love it, dude.
I know.
You already know people are going to love it.
People are already super positive. Thank you so much.
The trailer was awesome.
Yeah. Shout out to Cameron Kennedy, who makes like all of like the dope-ass in-review intros and went all out on Zelda In-Review. So yeah. Shout out to
him.
Awesome.
I can't wait to see it. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Muhammad. Drew Garnet Fructis. Is it Fructis or Fructis? What does Greg say?
I don't know.
It's actually Fructis, but...
Fructis?
I don't know what Greg says, but whatever it is, probably wrong.
Drew Garnet Fructis, Blackjack, Fructis, and the Kind of Funny Destiny 2 PC clan. Today, we're brought to you by kindoffunny.com/Patreon, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have 5 stories today.
A bigger dozen!
Starting with our number one. Actually, before we get there, it looks like Greg Miller walked in. He has a thing to say. What's up, Greg?
Fructis, because that's what Greg says. That's what the shampoo is. That the Fructis is the made up part of it. It's Drew Garnier is the guy's name. I had the Fructis.
How do you spell Fructis? Because I don't think I'm familiar with this.
R-U-I-T.
I would say it's like Fruc. Fructis.
Maybe? Garnier Fructis, remember?
Oh, Fructis.
Remember those commercials?
Yeah.
Fructis.
No. I only remember the
Garnier Fructis. Stop being
so young.
I thought it was some kind of fruit tea.
That's what surprised me. Like when Greg explained the reference to you, I was like, wait, did Blessing not know what that was about?
I assumed it was some sort of like either tea or like some fruity thing. Because it has fruit in the name, but apparently it's
like fruit tea.
For the record,
I was hearing fruit every single
time. It's insulting. Neither of you know Garnier Fructis hair products, and I'm right there with Imran, where I do like not many of those songs.
did you not even know the Bay Area ones?
From Chicago.
No, I knew some of them.
You guys live in the Bay Area.
I've lived here for like 13 years now.
Yeah,
I knew some of them.
Okay, but are you aware of Mac Dre?
Huh?
Do you know Mac Dre?
No, I assure you, you can throw out a person. I'm not going to know them.
Okay.
Like Millie S. Missy Elliott, of course, right?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
You got a big dick, let me show her. Like, I knew that song, obviously.
Yeah.
Like,
Let's work it by Missy Elliott.
Oh, yeah, I know. I remember when it came up. Yeah, all right.
Cool. Number one, the BAFTA nominees have been announced, and Control and Death Stranding lead the bunch. This is by Hayden Taylor of GamesIndustry.biz. Death Stranding and Control lead the BAFTA Game Awards nominations with 11 each, tied for the highest number of nominations in the event's 17-year history. While both games appear in categories like animation, artistic achievement, and original property, Death Stranding was not nominated for Best Game, unlike Remedy's Control. Death Stranding creator Hideo Kojima will receive a fellowship, however, which is the highest accolade BAFTA can bestow. So for best game here, we have Control, Disco Elysium, Luigi's Mansion 3, Outer Wilds, Sekiro Shadows Die Twice, and Untitled Goose Game, which 2019 is the year that literally anything can win. So I'm not even going to try and guess.
Again, Goose Game like came out high at the DICE Awards, which is also, like BAFTA from what I understand, to be voted on by game developers and game creatives in the industry.
Yeah.
So there's a reasonable chance that like all of those are going to get washed out completely by Goose Game.
The thing I will say is that I like that BAFTA goes with best game as opposed to game of the year, because I feel like there's so much bullshit with like the quote unquote game of the year award. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like half of the people,
like, what represents the year the best?
Yeah, it's like
what represents 2019?
There's so much confusion
about Goose Game.
Is it the best game, or is it the game of the year being like the game that is the most popular, or the game that represents the year? I've always found that conversation to be infuriating.
I'm curious what's your personal, because like Tim and I disagree on this. Tim thinks game of the year should be like the objectively best game of the year. Well, I think it should always be like the one that resonated with you most. What's your?
I thought you guys were reverse on that. Tim thinks it should be the best game.
Yes,
I think it. I don't know, man. I don't care. that's where I kind of stand.
That's a good middle ground, honestly.
Yeah, over the last, I'm gonna say, 1 to 2 years, mm-hmm. I've realized that it means nothing. I think I've always kind of seen it as best game. That's kind of how I've always looked at it. Whenever IGN or different sites would do their game of the year, whenever the Game Awards would do their game of the year. But the more and more I've listened to the conversations and have heard people talk about it, I could see a case for having both the categories of best game and game of the year, and game of the year being more so like a Times Person of the Year kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where I think Donald Trump won 2016's Person of the Year for Time,
new
or whatever.
Presidents always win.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean he's the best person, but that means that like he's the person that most represents that year. I could see games doing a similar thing, Game Outlets doing a similar thing, and having it be like, okay, for Game of the Year, we're going to like Untitled Goose Game. I think makes sense in that context for 2019 Game of the Year, right? It's the game that broke out. It's the game that, you know, a lot of people were talking about, and it's the game that represents like this very specific moment in time that you can look back at 2019 and be like, oh yeah, Untitled Goose Game, that's the game that came out that year. That's the game of the year. Whereas for best game, it's kind of not that Untitled Goose Game also doesn't deserve best game, but that wouldn't be my first pick. I feel like for most people, that would not be their first
pick.
Honestly,
like even from that first definition, I don't know that in 2 years we'll still be talking about Untitled Goose Game. I think a lot of the other games on that list we might be.
Really? As far as like, well, in that context, what would you say is the game of the year of 2019?
In that context?
Because I almost don't know if there is one.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a weird year.
That one's much harder. Like, I remember the year before last when it was like God of War and Red Dead. Those are still honestly two of the only games I remember from that year.
Yeah.
That was only 2 years ago. And this one, I think most of these, if I had to say or pick one, I would probably say Outer Wilds. Not just because it is a great game, but it's like one of those success stories of like this game kind of came out of nowhere and had this weird name confusion thing, and like nobody played it for most of the year, and towards the end everyone's like, holy shit, this game is really amazing.
Yeah, it represents something special.
It's an insurgency, which I don't think the Untitled Goose Game necessarily is.
Mm.
Like, it's successful and it did like a big good meme quality, but I don't know that it's. Again, this depends on what definition we decide to go with best game really means.
But. Yeah. And so, like, I personally would like to see those things both represented, best game and game of the year, and game of the year have that being more of a cultural, what is the game that represents this year the most? Because I feel like that is an interesting conversation also. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like that's a fun conversation to have. And best game is also, like, a fun conversation to have as far as what game was designed the best, what game had the most polish, what game, like, what are like the check boxes that we're listing off that games have to tick in order to become the best game of the year, and how do we compare them to each other?
What do you make of Death Stranding getting so many nominations and Kojima getting a fellowship but not being on best game?
I get it. Death Stranding is such a weird game that I could understand the argument for people being like, Death Stranding had, you know, one of the best soundtracks, looked the best out of any game last year, had some of the most unique and maybe even best direction, you know, did whatever with story. Like, I could see all these different things, and I could see the same person saying all those things, also saying that, hey, the way it came together didn't necessarily do it for me.
And that same person is saying, but Untitled Goose Game, that should be a nominee. You know what I'm saying?
That's a strange person.
God. Why? I get it for the meme, but is it a good game?
I mean, according to the BAFTAs, it's one of the best.
All right.
And so I can't really argue with it.
It's right there on the best game list.
Yeah.
Like, not game of the year.
Not game of the year, but best game.
Yes.
Untitled Goose Game, according to the BAFTAs. Charles Jacobson writes in and says, greetings, Blessing and Imran. So the BAFTA Games nominees have been announced, and going through the various categories, I noticed one really odd choice. Debut game lists Death Stranding. I went to check if maybe I didn't understand the category, but I did. Quote, it is given in honor of the best first game from any studio or individual, end quote. I realize the current Kojima Productions isn't the same as the previous. However, the majority of people came from it, and it's certainly not Kojima's first game. How do you feel about this nomination? I love Death Stranding, but this is a nomination I can't agree with. It also feels odd given the amount of backing KP had from Sony compared to say Knights and Bikes made by a two-man studio with assistance from a couple of collaborators. Imran, I'm going to open up the link to gamesindustry.biz because I want to see the other nominees for best debut. Mm-hmm. But off bat, does this strike you as strange?
I mean, yes and no. Like, again, as far as I know, BAFTAs are peer nominated, so maybe they just don't do any checking when they got a nomination. It was like, yeah, no, this fine, it counts. Game Awards had a very similar thing this past year where I think like best, there was a category simply for, I think it was Subway Fresh or whatever. Was best new game from a debut studio, and yeah. it included Goose Game from House House, who has made other games before.
Yeah,
so it's weird. I guess they literally don't check, or they go like, "Well, yeah, maybe they have, but this is the big one," or they're like, "Well, we don't care." Like, It could be that they worked on Metal Gear, but this is a rebirth for the character of the
studio
and for the designer and all that stuff. So maybe they consider it a new one. Maybe it's just they want to give Kojima another award because. But Europe fucking loves Kojima.
Mm-hmm.
Like
the debut game nominees on the BAFTA website are Ape Out, mm-hmm. Death Stranding, Disco Elysium, mm-hmm. Katana Zero, Knights and Bikes, and Manifold Garden. And within those nominations, Death Stranding just stand out as like a particular one.
Yeah, I mean it's a weird category in general.
It is.
Like most of the ones you listed were people who have made other games or worked at big studios.
Yeah.
Previously, and now they've broken out and made their own indie studio. I think it's real weird company to have like a bunch of really insurgent indie games and then like fucking Death Stranding, which had $100 million spent on it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, we don't know that it's gonna win. It's in the nomination list.
Yeah, and that's my thing too. I feel like that might kind of hold it back from mm-hmm. winning a bit. But I don't really have a problem with it being nominated because technically it is the studio's debut game, even if the studio is the rebirth of a studio that already existed.
Yeah.
Technically, it's a new studio, and so I'm not too broken up about it. But yeah, like I don't really see it being a problem.
I was actually really – I didn't think I realized until last year sometime that it's still called Kojima Productions.
Really?
I thought it was like Ludums or something.
No, that was like their – well, one, I think like the Luden thing is like their mascot. But then it's like – it's more so like a philosophy. It's like a religion.
That is the most Kojima-ass explanation you could give. Like,
yeah, I know.
Because they had the mascot and they're like, yeah, Ludens. And I'm like, okay, cool. That's a cool new name for a studio. And later it was like, yeah, Kojima Productions make this game. It's like, what? Wasn't that just a sub-studio of Konami? But I guess not. And I guess they're new enough that this is the best debut.
There you go.
I disagree with phrasing on that, but sure.
Number two. And Bear, I'm going to need your assistance on this one as far as video video assistance.
I don't know, man. Sounds like a lot.
Well. Number two. Valve drops some Half-Life Alyx gameplay. This is by Igor Bonifacique. That's what I'm going to call you, of Engadget. Write to me, DM me if I got that wrong. Igor, if you're watching this, you're probably not. With just a couple of short weeks before Half-Life Alyx comes out on March 23rd, Valve has shared three new trailers from the upcoming game. Having played Half-Life 2 and its subsequent DLC countless times, the most jarring aspect of the trailers is the fact that Valve recast Alyx. She's now voiced by Ozioma Akaga from Mirror's Edge Catalyst and The Runaways, instead of series veteran Merle Dandridge. However, once you get past that, there are a variety of interesting details on display. To start, we see the game's three different movement modes in each of the videos. It also looks like the gloves Alyx wears have some of the capabilities of Half-Life 2's iconic gravity gun. Specifically, they appear to allow you to pull items to you without physically moving them and picking them up as such, they effectively let you spend less time moving Alyx, which, along with the different movement modes, should help with motion sickness. In the third and final gameplay trailer, we see Alyx fight her way through an abandoned factory setting. The interesting revelation here is that Half-Life 2's manhacks return to Half-Life Alyx. If the name doesn't sound familiar, they were the drones that would hurl themselves at you with razor-sharp blades. At one point, we also see Alyx pull a van door to use as impromptu cover against a Combine soldier. Imran, did you check out the gameplay yesterday that dropped?
No, I did not. This is the first time I'm seeing it. And like, they're doing a pretty good job in this trailer of showing things that you need VR for.
Yes. That was my big takeaway. I was watching the three different gameplay trailers yesterday, and it seems like this game really takes advantage of you actually being in the environment. So you see here in the gameplay video that Alex is like ducking undercover, and there was, I think there was a moment earlier, I don't know if I missed it while I was reading or not, but she like pulls a car door open in order to use it as cover. And in some of the other gameplay videos, they show her glove, which is like a gravity glove that can do exactly what she just did there. And so she magnetizes things to her hands, and so she can throw them. And yeah, you're like throwing grenades in VR and all this stuff. It looks really awesome.
Yeah, this looks cool. I don't know that I want to play it yet.
Really?
Like, I want to try all these things out, but like, nothing about this screams I want to play this for 5 hours. You
or
know,
like
I want to play
15 hours.
Yeah,
I think that's how long they've said the game is.
I want to be in this playground for a couple of minutes, like an hour, and like just test stuff around. But like, not as far as game design goes, that was just a pretty basic, like, here's an open area with some cover.
Yeah.
Like, go into a room and shoot some dudes.
In like the first couple of gameplay trailers, they do have like some more like explorative, you know, walking around, looking at items, that kind of stuff too in there.
Yeah.
But I think the thing for me that has me excited is, have you played Blood and Truth?
Yes.
So yeah, it feels like, or it looks like it's Blood and Truth-ish, but doing all that stuff better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's without like the big like action like set pieces, because Blood Truth was definitely like a Fast and Furious, like, hey, we're throwing all the action at you, explosions, all this stuff. This seems more tame from that, but it seems to be taking those mechanics of being in VR and actually like being in the shootouts and actually like being able to have that maneuverability, reloading, all that stuff.
I think my issue, and I fully recognize this is completely unfair, is that when Valve comes back and they say we're bringing back Half-Life, and we'd bring back Half-Life because we have such an amazing idea for it, I expected more than this is just the best VR we've seen so far.
Mm-hmm.
I expected somewhat of a revolution in the VR.
Yeah, like the Mario 64 of VR.
Yeah,
basically.
That kind of thing. Or like Half-Life 2 for FPSs.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, hey, we're taking physics to a new level. This is like, okay, this is really cool, but this is also not that different from what VR FPSs have done before. It's just a lot more well thought out and balanced.
Okay.
And like, that's fine. That is totally a game I'm going to play. It's a game I'm interested in like actually seeing. I don't know. It's a totally unfair thing, but I'm not as blown away as expected to be.
That makes sense. And I understand the idea of not being blown away, because I feel like, watching gameplay, nothing here really strikes me as like this is the next level or the next step.
Right.
But it does also strike me as this is some of the best first-person shooter VR gameplay I've seen.
Right.
But that's not necessarily the highest bar right now.
Like, the context of Valve took a 14-year break on Half-Life at this point. So why, like, this is what they come back with, which is, it still, again, looks great, but it's not the next big step forward that, I tweeted a thing the other day that, like, apparently freaked people out, but this September, we will be as far away from Mario 64 as Mario 64 was from Pong. So, like, people were replying to that going, I don't think game design has changed that much since Mario 64. And, like, it has.
Yeah.
Just not as much as it has since Pong, you know? But I'm looking at this and like, okay, the difference between Half-Life 1 and Half-Life 2, I feel like, is greater than between Half-Life 2 and Half-Life Alyx. Yeah,
okay. I could see that argument. I think that I think that makes sense. At the same time, I'm very much excited for this, just for the idea that I think for a VR game, this is doing a lot. Like, not necessarily doing anything that feels super groundbreaking, for sure. But for me, I look at this and I get very excited, just because it seems like it seems the most polished I've seen a VR game, and it's like 15 hours long, which makes me think that, it makes me wonder if that's going to feel like a very natural experience.
Yeah.
Right? 15 hours in VR, because I don't think I've played any VR game that's been that long yet.
Or is it going to be like, there's a natural chapter stop, why don't you take a break now and like come back to this in a couple of hours? Like,
yeah.
Is that the way the game is going to be segmented out? And if so, like, I'm curious, the main thing for this, for me, is I want to see how Valve handles VR problems. And I'm going to play this game. I'm probably going to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. It's just, the expectations I had based on, hey, we're announcing a new Half-Life game, hey, we had an idea that was so good we had to go through with it. It's like, okay. And just are you going to show me that idea at some point, or is it just that this is polished to a sheen and you're showing what VR can do from a traditional game perspective? If that's the case, then cool, but I'm a little more... I expected more,
yeah. I mean, does this excite you from the idea that this is... Or from the assumption, really, that this is going to be setting up Half-Life 3, that we'll probably be getting Half-Life 3 soon after this?
No, I don't care about Half-Life Story at all.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I do. I played those games, but, like, at this point, Half-Life 3 has got to be something that the expectations of it are so astronomical that they're going to blow the expectations of Half-Life Alyx away. Uh-huh. And if I'm already a little, like, suspicious of this, I think everyone in the, like, who's a Half-Life fan is going to look at Half-Life 3 like, really, you made this decision? Like, you're not revolutionizing FPSs again, which, again, also completely unfair.
Yeah, do you think when Half-Life 3 comes out, and I'm using the word when, take that with a grain of salt, but, like, if Half-Life 3 were, say, announced after Half-Life Alyx, and let's say Half-Life 3 is coming out 2022, what do you think it needs to do in order to live up to expectations? Because I think, for me, the way I kind of look at it is, yes, Half-Life 1, revolution. Half-Life 2, revolution, both in different ways, right? Mm-hmm. Half-Life 1 with kind of its setup as like a narrative first-person shooter game, and Half-Life 2 with its physics and technology and all that stuff. Does Half-Life 3 need to do that? Does Half-Life 3 need to really be a next step? Or can it just come out and be a fantastic first-person shooter? Can it be like a Titanfall 2 story kind of deal and satisfy?
Need to and satisfy are operative words there.
True.
Like, I think for the mass market, if they released a very good Half-Life game that was AAA, it had, like, the budget people expect and all that stuff, it would do fine.
Mm.
I think the people who have been clamoring for a Half-Life 2 are going to be like, okay, that was fine, what's next? And the answer from Valve is going to be like, what do you mean, what's next? This is the thing. This is what we're putting out there.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think it's going to... I don't think there's any way for Half-Life 3, should it ever exist, to match up to the hopes, dreams, aspirations, and expectations they've got on them.
Man, I would have imagined that those hype levels for Half-Life 3 being something revolutionary would have dissipated by now. Because I'm like, what else are you going to do as far as being a first-person shooter?
But they revolutionary. They have dissipated, but they come back the second you say Half-Life 3 is coming.
Uh-huh.
Like, once you do that, people are like, okay, well, I have expectations now of what that game is going to be. If it's Half-Life 2 but prettier, then I think they're going to have, not problems, but...
People are just going to be, like not disappointed, but underwhelmed.
Yeah.
Imagine.
And, again, it's also a question of, like, how much does that really matter? What if people are underwhelmed? Who really cares? Like,
and that's kind of where I'm coming at it from is how many people are going to be underwhelmed by Half-Life 3 not being a revolutionary of a revolution of gameplay design and revolution of narrative or whatever you want it to be? How many people are disappointed by that it becomes like a big deal, right? Yeah. Are most people like, hey, we got Half-Life 3 and it's an excellent game with the Valve budget and the Valve game design that we've all come to love, right? Being assisted by what's the Firewatch team?
Campo Santo.
Yeah, Campo Santo with their eye for narrative, all that stuff. Like, I feel like if it comes out and it is a 9 out of 10 shooter or like 10 out of 10 shooter, which is asking a lot.
Yeah.
That's like a high bar right there. But yeah, I think that would be enough.
I mean, like, there's no shortage of FPSs that are great, but then people just slowly forget them.
Mm.
Like, BioShock Infinite is a very good example of that. Of like, I don't think that's a bad game. But, like, it mostly fell out of the public consciousness for...
What was the last 10 out of 10 shooter? Now, like, 10 out of 10 first-person shooter? Because now that I say that out loud, I feel like it's been...
For me personally or in general?
Like, something that's been widely regarded as, like, a 10 out of 10 first-person shooter.
I think Titanfall 2 is perfectly paced, but didn't review 10 out of 10.
Yeah. I'm talking about something that's been, like, reviewed 10 out of 10 by, like, major sites or a major site. This might be good for kindoffunny.com / you're wrong.
COD 4, maybe?
I feel like at that point, I feel like we got to the point with first person shooters that it is, you would have to put out a banger to buy a 10 out of 10 shooter.
I mean, that's true in most games.
Yeah. Like, but like, I mean, still, like, God of War, 10 out of 10, Red Dead Redemption 2 got 10s out of 10s, Mario Odyssey, Breath of the Wild. And I feel like there are certain genres where you can still kind of break ground in that, you know, it's not unfathomable that somebody puts out a third-person action game that is a 10 out of 10. Mm-hmm. You know, if you tug on the right strings, if you do everything right. I couldn't imagine somebody putting out a 10 out of 10 first person shooter today.
Is it just because like there's too much in the ether right now?
I think it's a mixture of there being a lot of shooters for sure, but then also like how do you improve on this genre? How do you make something that feels like it is flawless and perfect in this genre? Not that 10 out of 10 means perfect, but to a certain extent, I feel like there's so much that we expect from a first person shooter. Or not even so much that we expect, but it's just hard to impress people.
Yeah.
Really. Because right. Like, what are you going to do that's new?
I went through IGN and GameSpot's list of 10 out of 10 games, and none of them are first person
shooters. None of them?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I think part of it is expectations, as we've been using that word a lot. But, for example, Doom comes out in a couple of weeks. And I'm extremely excited for Doom. I think Doom is a Game of the Year candidate.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine a situation where that game gets 10 out of 10.
And that's my thing. Doom 2016 is probably the closest for me to a 10 out of 10 first-person shooter that I've played in the last generation. And even that, I think, got like... what did that get in IGN? Because I don't want to misquote whoever reviewed it. But that got like either an 8 or a 7.
Yeah.
And part of that was the multiplayer.
Yeah. Which is also fair. An insane thing now. When, like,
yeah, now you look back at Doom 2016 and it's like, why are you reviewing the multiplayer? Why are you weighing the multiplayer so high in this experience?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Doom got a 7.1 on IGN.
7.1
at IGN. Yeah, it reviewed very low at IGN, but
did it get other higher?
Other places reviewed it higher. Yeah, but again, like, I think Eternal is, from what we played, was better than Doom 2016. I think the changes they're making that game are very smart and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that what it would take for me to like using that as a bar.
Yeah.
Of like, what would you add to that game or change about that game to make it a 10 out of 10? And I can't think of anything.
Yeah. And that's my thing is like, what if Half-Life 3 is announced and is coming out? How do you make that game a groundbreaking experience? How do you make that a benchmark first person shooter game that people look to? And like, you would have to figure out a new idea and like a totally new idea and a totally new way to present first person shooters. And we've come so far in first person shooters. I don't know how you do that.
Right. It would just have to focus on story. That's really what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. But this conversation we're having right here is why I think they don't make Half-Life 3 or why they haven't made it so far. And I doubt they make it next.
Hmm.
I want a new Left 4 Dead, honestly, like make that game.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
New Left 4 Dead. I was playing World War Z. Zombie Army 4 trilogy with Greg, and I was like, shoot, man, I want to play World War Z, and I was like, man, I should just play Left 4 Dead. Like, they should make a new Left 4 Dead so I can play it, because I missed that era of Left 4 Dead games, because I had a PlayStation. I was rocking PlayStation 3 at that time. So I had friends that had Left 4 Dead, and I would be over at the place, and I'd play a little bit, but I never really fell into it, because zombies weren't my thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they put out Left 4 Dead today, dude, I'd be totally into it. I'd be in for it.
I recently started playing again with some friends, and that game is real old. Like, it's over, it's 11 years old at this point, and it feels like it in a lot of ways. It's still very fun, but it's like, okay, I could do with a modern update on this formula.
Have you tried World War Z?
I have not tried World War Z.
That might be what you're looking for.
That was...
Or Zombie Army 4.
Yeah.
Because that wasn't too bad. It was all right.
Mm.
It was like a strong, like... It was like a good game. I wouldn't say it's great, but it was like... It was fun.
THQ Nordic paid $400 million to those people, so hopefully that.
Wait, is that THQ Nordic? Zombie Army?
No.
World War Z. Yeah. Okay.
Saber made that, and THQ Nordic just bought them.
Gotcha. Number three, the ESA says they'll move ahead with E3 2020 despite coronavirus concerns. This is by Rebecca Valentine of GamesIndustry.biz. The Electronic Software Association plans to move forward with E3 plans despite growing concerns over the spread of novel coronavirus, also known as COVID-19. Quote, everyone is watching the situation very closely, said the ESA in a statement to Vice Games. We will continue to be vigilant as our first priority is the health, wellness, and safety of all our exhibitors and attendees. Given what we know at this time, we are moving ahead full speed with E3 2020 planning. Exhibit and registration sales are back on track for an exciting show in June, end quote. This statement came in the wake of the indefinite postponement of the Game Developers Conference, otherwise known as GDC, after a flurry of major companies dropped out of the event due to COVID-19 concerns. This is something we talked about yesterday, me and Greg, on both KFGD and on PSLV XOXO, where GDC having been postponed now indefinitely to the summer, which we'll see if it happens in the summer. Does E3 continue to go on? They're saying that yes, they're continuing.
I think it's very optimistic to think that like this whole thing will be situated or taken care of by the summer. Mm-hmm. Granted, like, cases in China have been going down, and people have been, like, getting cured, they've been recovering from this. So, like, if it can get done there, theoretically it can get done here. We don't know for a fact that that's true. It could get worse. Healthcare is one of those things that you have to consider is might be a problem in, like, preventing an outbreak of something in America. But I think they're way too early to announce or figure out whether or not, like, E3 can go on.
Yeah.
Granted, if things start getting worse by, like, May, June, there's a lot of big summer things that are going to get delayed. Like, for example, we think about, like, the big summer events like E3.
Mm-hmm.
We have two presidential conventions in the summer.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking about 10,000 people each in, like, just an area. Are they going to allow that to happen if there's still a coronavirus outbreak? Like, there are a lot of things that are big issues with how this thing is handled in the future. I think by probably May, not really earlier than May, probably, like, end of April, they were start saying, like, okay, we might not be able to do this. Granted, that's only, like, a month and a half at this point, but I don't see E3 getting canceled unless they absolutely have to.
Yeah.
Because the ESA needs that money. But if E3 is canceled and let's say everyone does their own events, like let's say CD Projekt Red is out there with a new Cyberpunk thing, and every year they've been at E3 with a little meeting room off the event hall that like they bring people in to go check out the new trailer for the game or a new demo.
Mm-hmm.
If it turns out that they did it themselves and it's totally fine and got the same amount of like social media play and all that stuff and previews, despite the fact that it wasn't E3, why next year would you pay all that money to come back to E3?
Hmm.
Pay all the flights and the risk of disease and the rental of the room and the hotels and all that stuff when it works out that you can just
It's easy to do on our own. Or not easy, but it's a thing we're able to do on our own and not spend all the money for E3 and all that stuff.
That is a thing I think ESA is going to be extremely aware of, that if they cancel E3 and it works out that everyone else is fine, then E3 next year is dead. Like,
Ricky McFly writes in and says, the ESA announced it's, quote, moving ahead full speed with E3 2020 planning, end quote. Despite so many companies dropping out because of supposed coronavirus concerns, do y'all think they're stuck in a position where they can't cancel E3? If they did, would that be the final nail in the coffin for an already dying show?
Imran. Yes.
Think so?
For 100%. I think they wouldn't cancel next year's show, but people would go to it and be like, this sucks.
Mm.
And if they end up doing that kind of thing, like let's say they do hold E3 but companies do drop out, then people will pay money to go to a thing where there's not actually that many games, which is like, that's a worse situation than PAX at that point. And so why would you ever go back next year? And all the news stories will be like, yeah, we talked to a bunch of people who were at E3 and they said it sucked. So if you're running a convention where the thing is you have to be here because this is where the games are and this is where all the hot things are happening, then the worst thing is not a cancellation necessarily, it's being boring.
Yeah.
And both of those are bad for them, but I think they'd be better off to cancel than just have a shitty show.
This is the question that Greg asked me yesterday that I'll ask you. How close can we get to E3 before they have to cancel it?
May.
If they don't... Is that not too soon? Or do you feel like they
have to
stick it out?
I mean, GDC was canceled last week, and it would have been in 2 weeks from now.
Yeah. But I feel like the situation where that progressed so rapidly that it became out of their hands at that point.
I think by the end of May we'll know if, for example, Tokyo has canceled the Olympics, which is a $7 billion issue that they're like, if that happens, then coronavirus is still a major thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that will probably inform how the ESA handles things.
That makes sense.
But I think they're better off canceling than not if the issue is that people are going to drop out.
Mm. This KFGD has been so interesting over the last few weeks because somebody joked in, I think, the Reddit or somewhere that it's now kind of funny, Coronavirus Daily or whatever.
I've had to
Dude, I've talked so much about something I don't know anything about.
Yeah, I've had to talk
so
like
much.
A bunch of doctors to do a bunch of research about this shit of like trying to figure out how to talk about this on like various podcasts and whatever.
Yeah.
And it's the most alarming thing is talking to doctors to be like, we have no idea. Like, you don't, you can't.
Yeah, that's the thing.
You can't tell what we can talk hypothetically, but you can't really tell what an outbreak's going to look like. Because if we had it under control, then it wouldn't be an outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they're real. I heard recently about a game that they have not announced the game yet because they need to announce a collector's edition for it. But they don't know that they can announce a collector's edition for it if they can't manufacture it. Uh-huh. So they can't announce the game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like throwing off like that very simple thing of they can't announce the thing because the manufacturing is so concerning them right now mm-hmm. that it's having like weird ripple effects through the gaming industry.
Yeah.
And I expect that, let's say E3 does get canceled, I don't think consoles will get manufactured in the summer. Granted, China's, like I said, doing better. They're doing better through a very authoritarian way of like containing a virus, but they are like the numbers are going down. So, but if like console manufacturing is still a problem, then like, okay, I'm changing tacks for a second, but we're all like concerned about why there hasn't been a PlayStation event already. What if one of the reasons, and I'm sure one of the reasons also Sony just isn't flying anywhere, but one of the reasons is, where are you going to put an event to bring in like 1,000 people to put them into a room that isn't already like dangerous? Like there's a coronavirus case in New York. There's deaths in Seattle. There's a bunch of California.
Yeah. Not deaths, I mean, but state of emergency in San Francisco or in the Bay Area.
Yeah. There was a
California.
There was a reported case in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
So like even places E3 has been, you can't really just have it.
This is the conversation me and Greg were having yesterday. I forget if it was on PSLV or KFGD, but yeah, he was like, we were talking about the PlayStation reveal event, so I think it was PSLW, and he was talking about how, yeah, like, where, like, do you, how do you do an event with this going on? And, like, my response was that, like, oh, like, this isn't GDC, this isn't a big event, right? If you're good, if it's only 1,000 people, right, is that really a big concern? And then, like, this morning, like, we got notification, or I don't know if it was this morning, but we recently got notification of an event that we were going to go to that it's not happening anymore. And it's like, oh, well. Yeah. Yeah, like, how do you, what are they going to do then?
Yeah, I mean, like, a cruise ship of, what, 300 people? Like, a good third of them were infected. Like, that's, or were showing symptoms or might have been infected, like, whatever. Yeah. But, so, I think if you put 1,000 people in a room and tell them, like, hey, we're going to put your hands on a new console, everyone will be like, I'm good. Mm-hmm. I don't need to go out there for game coverage. I think maybe the Microsoft thing and just putting out a blog post and saying, like, here's some numbers might be one of the smartest things they've done in a while. Because it shapes a narrative.
Scary stuff.
It is.
Scary times we live in. Number 4, Marvel has announced a new open world RPG, .. And it's for mobile. this comes from Marvel.com. Marvel Games and Netmarble Corp., the company behind the long-running hit mobile game Marvel Future Fight, announced they are collaborating on another game during PAX East, featuring an all-new original storyline and starring fan-favorite Marvel superheroes and supervillains. Marvel Future Revolution is Marvel's first open-world game on mobile. Barry, can you bring up? I have a YouTube link to the trailer for it. But does an open-world action or open-world RPG mobile Marvel game do it for you, first of all, Imran?
No.
Me neither.
It's not like mobile games have a difficult time getting a foothold with me anyway. Because like, if I have my phone out, it's easier and faster to just load Twitter if I'm doing something.
Yeah, that's my thing too. Is that when I'm messing around with my phone, the last thing I kind of want to do is to get into like a gaming experience.
Because like most games are gonna take like, let's say this is a bit. This game looks like what we're seeing right now on this trailer.
Uh-huh.
That's gonna take a little while to load.
Oh yeah.
And if I have a couple of, that's the other thing is I need my phone to be a phone a lot of the times. Yeah.
Like the trailer right now is Spider-Man, you know, fighting villains.
Yeah.
These look like
Thanos' like dog army thing.
Yeah, they look kind of like that. Captain Marvel's here.
Like there was another Marvel game for mobile that I think also was Netmarble now that I think about it.
Mobile, that was probably Future Fight.
Yeah. There was like a turn-based RPG game. Or maybe it was
I
don't know. But I played it at something. I don't remember what it is now. But I was like, okay, this looks cool.
And then we got Doctor Strange here.
But then I never actually ended up downloading it. Because
So Ricky McFly writes in. This is the second question for Ricky McFly in a row. Ricky McFly writes in and says, Marvel announced its new mobile game, Marvel Future Revolution, an open-world RPG that seems to have all the ingredients for building up a lot of hype leading up to its launch. What do y'all think mobile games need to do to break into the public conscience in a positive way?
I think they've already broken into the public conscience. It's people like us that don't care.
Yeah.
Like...
Yeah, I think, like, this game is going to do well.
Yeah.
Being a Marvel game and net Marvel game on mobile.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people are going to play it.
Yeah.
But it's when you say in a positive way, Ricky, I think that would require overall trends for mobile mm-hmm. to change as far as how they're monetized and as far as like the gameplay structure of them.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's going to happen because they're successful doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
And so I don't think there's really a way. Also, this is a great. This looks like a cool scene from this game. I don't think there's really much that mobile games can really do to change the overall perception. Like, maybe Marvel and Netmarble can change like the direction of their game specifically to mm-hmm. align with you know our sensibilities for what yeah. we like in games. But one, do they want to do that because they're still making money? And two, will that really change how we perceive like their games?
I mean, that's what Apple Arcade was supposed to do, right? It was supposed to change the perception so that like. Only shitty gacha games are not the thing people think of when they think of mobile. They think of like actual high efforts that go for money and like go for a one-time payment and don't actually have to monetize over and over for the life of the game. But a game like that's never going to come to Apple Arcade.
Yeah.
They want to make as much money as possible, so they're going to go for the whale hunting strategy.
Yeah.
And that's just the way the market works for mobile, I guess. And I don't see anything in the future ever changing that unless the market just completely falls out.
Yeah, unless something happens drastically to where the market then does not favor that type of monetization, then yeah, we're gonna have this for the time being. Yeah. Though if you're a Marvel fan and you like those mobile games, boom, there you go.
Yeah,
Marvel Ultimate Super Fight, whatever it's called.
I will say there's a mobile game I played recently that I liked. Was mm-hmm. I can't remember the name of it now. It was like a King of Fighters brawler.
Oh.
That's like, okay, this is actually pretty fun. Granted, also shitty gacha. Uh-huh. But once you stop, like, if you just decide, okay, I'm done playing this, then it's fine. Like, mm-hmm. it's a free download. It's like, all right, cool. I got out of this what I wanted out of it.
Dope. Marvel Future Revolution, that's what that was. Number five, if you love a cheap-ass platinum like Greg, great news. Indie publisher Radalika Games will be presenting a video showcase on their YouTube channel focusing on indie visual novels coming to consoles for the first time. The showcase is planned for March 4th, 2020 at 7 a.m. Pacific time and will feature several new announcements and even a surprise for the Nintendo Switch, Sony PS4, PlayStation Vita, and Microsoft Xbox One systems.
Vita just sneaking in there.
So there you go. Greg definitely put that on the docket because I was not there when I was putting it together. So if you love cheap platinums and you want to, and even some of the Radalika games, as I understand it to be, are good. And so if that interests you, boom. And if you like visual novels, boom. I hope they put Doki Doki Literature Club on.
Hey, speaking of visual novels, Danganronpa 1, 2, and 3, or V3, is on, it's a bundle that's on Steam right now that's on first sale for $20.
Oh.
Deal of the day.
Yeah.
Deal
fucking
of the day.
Download that. Danganronpa 1 and 2 are great.
I played one of them mm-hmm. for IGN. I forget which one. And I only played like the first hour, but it was cool. I was into it.
For Danganronpa?
Yeah. Yeah.
Imran, I'm so excited for what Radalika Games has to showcase and what cheap platinums I can get pretty soon. But that's so far away. And by far away, I mean in tomorrow. If I wanted to know what's coming to Mom Grop shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Yeah. Out today, we got Curse of the Dead Gods for PC, Granblue Fantasy Versus for it's no console
it's
or
for PS4.
Here. For PS4.
There's
going to
be a PC
exclusive.
Release in a couple of weeks. Have you played that yet?
No, I've not.
It's really good.
So here's the deal. Yesterday, and PSLV is out today for everybody, we do a segment on PSLV for like 104 PSN games that we had to like rank, or 104 PlayStation games that we had to play and then rank.
Mm-hmm.
And we basically choose from the PlayStation drop on the blog. And so this last one had Granblue Fantasy Versus and Utter Night Inbirth on it, along with like a few other games. And for me, it came down between those two because I like fighting games.
Mm-hmm.
And my reasoning for going with Utter Night Inbirth was, hey, Granblue Fantasy Versus is developed by Arc System Works. And so like I know who they are. They're like a big developer. I'll probably play this game anyway, whatever. I'm going to go with Utter Night Inbirth. Then I realized Utter Night Inbirth is also developed by Arc System Works. They just do a lot of games.
I think like French Bread is the name of the developer, but Arc System Works has published the... They basically own Japanese fighting games at this point outside of Street Fighter.
Yeah. And so I want to play Granblue Fantasy Versus because it looks
very
awesome.
Smash Brothers-like in a way.
Is it really?
So, like, there's a skills, basically, and you can just use an action button and direction
mm-hmm.
to activate those skills. But there's a cooldown on them if you do it that way versus executing them.
Oh,
so it's
I like it.
Yeah, it's
that's cool.
Like, there's times where I try to execute generally, but there are times, like, I can't get this out fast enough, and I need to counter right now.
Yeah.
So I do rely on those skills, and it works out super well. It's a surprisingly well-balanced fighting game.
That's really cool. Yeah. I want to try it. So I might be balancing that in Under Night Inbirth, EXE, Solar, or CLR. Do you know? Do you understand why they name those games like that?
No idea.
Because it's very weird.
Yes. I remember Under Night Inbirth EXE Late Est, which is like, okay, that title kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I get where they're going with it.
And now it's like, okay, I don't know what you're doing anymore.
Yeah, it's very weird. Diesel Tech is out for PC. Of Evil and Darkness for PC. Amiibo Battle, Microscopic RTS Action for PC and Mac. Puddle Knights for PC. Whole Frame for PS4. Star Trek Online Legacy, now available for PS4 and Xbox One. Spellbreak launches in closed beta for PS4. And then Halo 1 Anniversary, I believe, is available on Steam, even though I didn't include the platform. And so maybe it's Xbox. I don't know, man. Maybe it's PlayStation 4.
Maybe that one will work if they try to stream it.
Halo 1 Anniversary?
Yeah. Maybe the Steam
If we try to stream it here?
Yeah.
Dude, but the thing is, it wasn't even the game that was the issue. It was, I think the first time, it was what, the internet barrier?
It was Xbox Live the first time.
It was Xbox Live.
And with the Halo collection, right, you have to be connected to the internet to even just play the story, which is the dumbest fucking thing to ever, like, implement. Uh-huh. And then, so yeah, Xbox Live was down the first day, which is very weird. And then
it was very weird because, like, it was
only in San Francisco.
Yeah, because I went home and I tried to watch Netflix because I was watching The Circle.
Yeah.
And I tried to watch on my Xbox and I couldn't connect. And I was like, oh, like, Xbox is down. Like, I can't do anything.
And then the next day, it was our internet that went out.
It's messed up.
I know.
They really don't want to play Halo.
Yeah.
Yep.
Phil Spencer's just like holding his hand over a button every time you guys are about to stream.
Now we'll just never do it now. I'm just kidding. We'll do it someday.
New dates. Guild Wars 2, titled Visions of the Past, Steel and Fire, is releasing this month on March 17th.
That's expansion, I think.
Is it expansion? Expansion titled Visions of the Past. Blame Greg, not me, for these.
Greg.
And then Hyper Parasite is out April 3rd, 2020, across PS4, Nintendo Switch, Xbox One, and PC. Now it's time for reader mail. You can write in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, or you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by kindoffunny.com/patreon. If you've thought about backing Kind of Funny on Patreon so that you can ask questions or get a squad up in, but you have been scared off by how complicated the system seems, worry no more. Thanks to our sponsor, kindoffunny.com/patreon. When you go to kindoffunny.com/patreon, you're given four simple choices to decide where you want to go to ask your question. Just click away. It's so easy, even Greg Miller could do it. So there you go. kindoffunny.com/patreon. Yeah, show the people. Barrett just went to kindoffunny.com/patreon. It's still my face. Okay, boom. Yeah, that's where you go. If you go to kindoffunny.com/patreon, if you're a visual watcher, then you have the buttons you can click to figure out where you want to go. You go, yeah, KF, bronze and silver, KF, gold and above, KFG, which is Kind of Funny Games, bronze and silver, and then Kind of Funny Games, gold and above.
Yeah,
Super simple. The systems aren't complicated. You want to ask a question. You want to get your squad up in. Boom. Right there for you.
You just click these, and it'll take you directly to the post.
Made it super easy. Thanks, kindoffunnygames.com/patreon. That's not the correct link. Don't go to that.
Kindoffunnygames.com
will not take you anywhere, I don't think. But does it reroute to kindoffunny.com?
I don't know.
Type it in.
Do you want me to find out?
Yeah, find out.
I'm curious who owns that.
Yeah, just type in kindoffunnygames.com. Oh, it's Giant Bomb. What?
No.
Oh, no. Don't buy that, please. I guess.
Maybe you shouldn't have revealed that. Edit this out, Barrett. Jonathan Arlio writes in, and I swear to God, if we go into that tomorrow and it links to giantbomb.com.
That'd be hilarious. That'd be the best.
That would be hilarious. Kevin.
What would be the funniest site to link that to? IGN?
No. Man.
Oh, man. We're making some, man. Well, This is not gonna go well.
Like, it would be it would be gauche and kind of boring to like get to some like weird porn site, but
yeah. Oh, Funhouse! Someone in the chat says Funhouse.
Funhouse.
Yeah.
Link it to Andy Streams.
Link it to
Twitch channel.
Yeah. Oh, honestly, that'd be hilarious. Yeah. It goes to twitch.tv/AndyCortez. Jonathan Arlio writes in and says, "What's the likelihood percentage wise we get part 2 and part 3 of the Final Fantasy VII remake in the next 6 years?
6 years?
Yeah.
Both?
Possible."
Both part 2 and part 3. Have they said how many?
Part 2 and part 3?
Yeah.
They haven't said how many it will be. They said they've already started working on part 2. Mm-hmm. That was about 6 months ago.
Let's assume here that in totality, we'll get three parts.
Mm-hmm.
With part 1 releasing in a few weeks.
Yeah.
What are the chances we get part two and part three in the next 6 years?
So the way they've said it is that Final Fantasy VII is now, it's not, don't think of it as one game they're splitting into parts. Think of it as a parallel series of the main Final Fantasy series. So I assume by that phrasing, they're looking at similar development times for like the main series as well. So we had one Final Fantasy mainline game in this generation, which is 15.
Yes.
Usually, I mean, they put out like four, five, six in the SNES era, 7, 8, 9 PS1, 10, 11, 12 PS2, 13, 14 in. So they've been going down for the last couple of generations.
Well, 13 had like three games in it, right?
Yeah. So I
13, 13, 2, 13 also 13 like, Lightning Returns.
But also like all those games are much lower budget than a Final Fantasy VII remake will be. So yeah, it entirely depends on how they like budget these things.
See that that quote, the idea that they're thinking of as like a parallel series to regular Final Fantasy makes me think that it might actually be longer. Because like now that makes me think, oh, are we gonna get Final Fantasy VII remake and then get Final Fantasy 16 and then remake 2 and then 17?
I think that's totally possible.
Oh, I hope not, because that's now we're looking at generations. Now we're looking at like how many generations are we gonna be playing Final Fantasy VII for?
I think there's a decent chance we're on a PlayStation 6. So we'll be finishing the Final Fantasy VII remake. I don't think too deep into the generation, but I don't think like this is a short-term project for them. I think this is for the next decade or so. This is one of those series that's going to happen.
I'm going to say part two, there's a 95% chance we get it in the next 6 years. Part three, I'm going to say 30% chance. Now, that's with and this would be thinking maybe they're like, maybe I'm not having enough hope and they are rushing them and they're developing these in overlap, right? Maybe they're built on the same systems, the same structures. So all
that is a question, like how much they're reusing between parts.
Yeah, because in that case, I can see it being 3 years between each of them. But that said, I don't know how, I know Final Fantasy takes a while sometimes.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm going to go 95% for part two. I think we'll definitely get part two within the next 6 years.
You played the demo, right?
Yeah.
There's a part in the demo where Cloud's remembering Sephiroth and hallucinating Sephiroth, and he sees the iconic scene of him like in fire and walking or turning around. That was used in Nibelheim originally, or not Nibelheim, it was used in Nibelheim flashback in the Calm. But that means to me that they're already looking forward to certain scenes, and they can have them to reuse. So they are probably going to be a little bit shorter. By virtue of that, at E3 last year, I talked to, who was it? Kitase. And I asked him, like, hey, are the games going to go any faster for the next ones? And he replied, like, we don't think they're going to go that much faster. Immediately after that meeting, Square Enix sent out a PR email to everyone saying, like, hey, yeah, he didn't mean that. We're already starting on the second one. They should go a bit faster from then on. So Square, I think, is aware of how long this is going to take.
Yeah.
The creative people don't think it's going to be that much shorter.
That's scary.
And this has been 5 years, but granted, they also stopped and restarted at some point.
It scares me.
Yeah.
Jamie S. writes in and says, what's good, Blessing and Ron? There's a long question here. Following up on my write-in form yesterday regarding the ongoing situation with NVIDIA GeForce Now, there are two articles posted yesterday that I think add a lot to the conversation. The first is from Patrick Klepek at Vice Gaming. That article is called Some Developers Don't Know Their Games Are Streaming on GeForce Now, and he links the article. Apparently, Hinterland is not the only dev, and I think Hinterland was the dev that removed The Long Dark, if I believe this is referencing what I think is referencing. Apparently, Hinterland is not the only dev who was not notified by NVIDIA that their games would be included on GeForce Now. Vice contacted multiple indie developers listed in the article who all claimed they were never notified, some having no idea the service even existed. In a separate article on The Verge titled, quote, NVIDIA's GeForce Now is becoming an important test for the future of cloud gaming, Nick Stat dives in on why it's important for developers to be able to remove their games from a service like GeForce Now, the main argument being that participation in GeForce Now could ultimately result in revenue loss for the dev as it reduces the avenues through which they can sell new copies of their games, specifically mobile ports and on other cloud services such as Stadia. I have so many questions about all of this, but I'll try to rein myself in. One, the number of devs who were unaware they were on GeForce Now suggests no efforts were made to contact smaller developers. Is this wrong? Even if NVIDIA isn't legally obligated to do so, is there an ethical or moral obligation to notify these devs? Two, GeForce Now seems to be highlighting a crossroads in the future of game streaming services, with one path favoring consumers, the other path favoring the devs. Which potential streaming future is the better option? Is there a compromise that would benefit everyone? Thank you for reading. And thank you. Yeah, thank you for reading. Imran, this is a conversation that me and Greg had on yesterday on Games Daily,
mm-hmm.
to where this was sparked by the dev of Long Dark, who I believe is Hinterland, who he's referencing here, taking their game off of GeForce NVIDIA Now because, and essentially saying they weren't notified that the game was going to be on there, but not really giving much further reason.
NVIDIA offered them a free GPU as compensation.
What's your take on this? Because yesterday, me and Greg were kind of on separate sides of it. Greg saying that like he doesn't really understand why devs wouldn't want their games on NVIDIA GeForce Now because those games are in your library already. Isn't this good for consumers, right? And I was more of the mind that not necessarily that it's a good business decision not to have your games on GeForce NVIDIA Now, but I understand the idea of, you know, either feeling slighted because you weren't notified your game was on the service, or the idea that, you know, you want control over your IP, you want control over where your games are going to be. And so I understand as like a almost like a cocky thing of like, hey, no, you're not going to have my game on your service without asking me, that kind of thing. Where are you at with all this?
I'm going to frustrate you and say that you're both kind of right. Like, there's both sides to it. Like, legally and ethically, legally, no, you don't have to notify them, I guess, because the law on this has not been written, so we don't know. But ethically, yeah, you absolutely should tell a developer where the game is being available for a subscription service that they're not getting any profit from, they're not seeing any real work with. I don't think that NVIDIA is necessarily in the wrong to say, hey, our library is just your library, so whatever it is, that's fine. You can use it. Like, if you were running a rental, not rental place, but like, let's say a party bus, and you had video games, and you were like, we have this entire video game library, like, you could just bring your own disc and play it in there, but we're charging you by the hour to play it. They don't have to notify Activision that, people are playing Call of Duty in our party bus.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the idea behind GeForce Now. That said, absolutely, if your game is being played in a way that you didn't necessarily intend, you should at least get a heads up and be told that, like, hey, your game is being supported by this thing, because how that game is played on that service reflects on you as a developer. And you suddenly have to start doing customer support for a thing you didn't even know was happening. So, like, let's say GeForce does something about GeForce streaming breaks a part of the Long Dark. I don't know enough about that to say what that might be, but let's hypothetically that happens. And someone sends you an email saying, like, hey, this isn't working on GeForce Now. What's the deal? You can't be like, I had no idea this was on GeForce Now. I'm not involved in that process at all. I can't troubleshoot this for you in any way, and we can't, like, look at it on our end. It's a complicated thing that I'm touching my face again. That I don't think there's an easy answer for, but at the end of the day, NVIDIA is charging money for a service that developers don't see any money from.
Yeah.
And is using the almost entirety of the entirety of the service is based on their computers and your games. So it's hard to say who, like, is it a pro-consumer argument? Is it an anti? I saw somebody saying this is just corporations are stomping over the little guy. But no, it's not corporations stomping over the little guy. It's corporations fighting each other. NVIDIA's valued at $200 billion. Like, if they wanted to talk to any developers or pay some out or whatever, they could totally do that. It just, that's not what their business plan is for this thing. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be an interesting fight. I'm kind of here, like, it kind of makes me sympathize with Stadia a little bit, because Stadia could have done this shit too, and they didn't.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, as far as, like, the, you know, are they legally obligated to do so, or do they have an ethical or moral obligation to notify devs, right? Obviously, they're not legally obligated to do so.
Well, we don't know that yet.
We don't know that yet. Yes. But I figure, like, if they were, I feel like this would have already kind of blown up already. Or maybe people just don't know because laws, we're not there yet.
Like, yeah, laws just haven't been written about it. Mm-hmm. And like, or precedent hasn't been set. Someone hasn't sued someone else over this.
Yeah. But I think at the very least, like, there's a courtesy there to hit up everybody whose games are going to be on your service to let them know that this is happening.
They 100% have a list of games that are supported.
Yeah.
Like, NVIDIA knows what they have internally, if not externally as well. They should be knocking on every... Send a courtesy email and ask permission. Because I guarantee you, probably most of those indie developers will be like, yeah, sure. If this is another place I'll get my game sold, then fine.
Yeah.
But no one's going to be happy about just having their shit taken and then... even if it was sold somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Now it's time to squat up. Gary writes in and says, looking for some fellow PC nerd KFBFs. Lately, I've been playing Monster Hunter World and Destiny 2, but... into a wide variety of games. Hit me up. Shout out to any Cleveland area best friends. Gary is Real Zombro on Steam. That's RealZombro. Real Zombro.
Yeah,
on
Cleveland.
Steve. Or on Steam.
Let's go, Steve. Cleveland. Woo!
Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. Remember, you can write in to let us know what we've gotten wrong as we get it wrong. And let's see what we got wrong here. Nanobiologist writes in and says, Imran's confusion regarding Kojima Productions may have come from them revealing Ludens, the company's mascot, first while saying that it was a tease for the first game. Well, that was something we kind of, we got into that a little bit.
Overwatch was the last FPS to win Game of the Year. That's true. Modern Warfare is arguably flawed. I could see the argument. Metroid Prime is one I definitely forgot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
I mean,
is that why they consider it a 10 out of 10 game, though? Metroid Prime?
I would say yes. Metroid Prime won for sure.
It was on neither IGN or GameSpot's list of 10 out of 10
games.
Yeah,
but IGN gave Doom a 7, so do they know?
Oh, man.
Fucking idiots over there, you know?
Calling you out, Dan Fools. Stapleton.
Come on, Jonathan Dornbush, step up your game.
Dan Stapleton, come find me, Dan Stapleton. I got some words. Angel writes in and says, Ludens isn't a religion as much as it is. I was joking about the religion, by the way. As it is an academic theory. Ludens is actually a reference to an academic work by Johann
Huizinga?
Huizinga. I have to like look in because I literally cannot see some of these letters because it's so far. Called Homo Ludens, in which... Oh, this is the whole thing about like the meaning of play and all that stuff.
Just name your damn studio something. Like,
look up Ludens and Ludo Narrative Dissonance and all that stuff if you want to learn more. People are writing with 10 out of 10 FPS games, but these are all arguable. Perfect Dark. Is Perfect Dark a 10 out of 10? Well, actually, somebody gave Perfect Dark a 10 out of 10.
Perfect Dark's a really damn good game. Perfect Dark Zero is one of the biggest disappointments I've ever had.
Oh, I think actually the conversation we were having on a few games casts ago was...
10 out of 10 games, yeah.
Yeah, 10 out of 10 games and the fact that Perfect Dark... is like one of the highest rated games on Metacritic.
Yeah.
Orange Box. But that's... It's like a few FPSs in one.
Portal 2 is a really good FPS. Like,
that's not an FPS, though. You wouldn't call Portal 2 an FPS.
I wouldn't consider Portal or Portal 2 an FPS.
You walk around in first person and have a gun in your hand.
You technically shoot portals.
Yes.
Yes.
I would put that more under the puzzle category than I would put under a shooter category.
I get, it's a first-person puzzle game,
yeah.
I guess.
It's fuzzy. I understand the idea that, yeah, Portal 2
genres
and Portal,
are dumb.
Genres are dumb, first of all, but then, yeah, Portal, technically, I can understand why you would say it's a first-person shooter, but it's not.
Yeah. That KOF All-Star game I liked is also the same people who are making the Marvel games. Maybe that game would be pretty cool. But it also, if it's like the KOF All-Star game, be pretty shitty gotcha.
People keep writing in about the Halo Combat Evolved Anniversary Edition that's out on PC and Steam. I did not miss that. I mentioned it. We joked about it.
It costs $3,000 to buy kindoffunnygames.com.
Oh, thank God. I was like, oh, I'm going to be in so much trouble. Somebody's going to reroute that to, like, I don't know, man, something bad. Final Fantasy... Okay, well, people are... Neil Bodges writes in and says Final Fantasy VII Part 2 was announced as in development in November 2019.
Yeah.
And for a second, I read that as Final Fantasy VII Remake has been delayed to November, and I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, I honestly, like... That April delay kind of fucks over some stuff. Like, Trials of Mana comes out 3 weeks after. Mm. No one's going to play that game. It comes out, like, the same month that Final Fantasy VII Remake. Like, they're cannibalizing their own games. I'm really disappointed because I really love Trials of Mana.
It's weird. When does Outriders come out?
Outriders? Oh, I have no fucking... They said it's a next-gen game, too, so it'll be, like, probably closer to the end of the year.
Yeah. Square Enix has an active year, I just realized.
Yeah, they're pushing, and they made that announcement the other day that, like, nothing is exclusive for a while.
Yeah.
For a couple of years, which makes me wonder, like, what does Final Fantasy 16 look like?
You think we'll get Final Fantasy 16 in the next couple of years?
Yeah. It's been forever since 15.
Hmm.
15 was 2015, wasn't it? No, 2016.
Was like
2016.
It was like right when I started at IGN, so it was like late 2016.
See, the way I've always looked at it is Final Fantasy VII Remake is kind of, I mean, not 15, but taking that place of a new numbered entry in a Final Fantasy.
It definitely
Fantasy
is
game.
In terms of money, but I think they're probably working on 16. Whether or not they announce it anytime soon is a different question.
Man, that's Final Fantasy overload right now, right there. Mm-hmm. If we get like that 7 Remake and 16. God.
When we were doing the cover story for 15, things were like, I have no idea what they are because just no one ever told me, and no one and I asked, they didn't like elucidate on this, but apparently the Game Informer staff was shown things at Square Enix that were still have yet to be announced at the Final Fantasy 15 studio. So who knows? Maybe like they've been working on 16 for quite a long time.
Of course. This has been Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindafunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.